think we're ready to convene, and we'll wait just a minute before we approve the minutes. Committee will come to order, and we have today a presentation on the State Capitol Restoration Project, and I believe we have Dana Badgerill, the commissioner, and we have Michael Bjornberg, the principal project manager, and we have Ms. Nancy Stark, and Paul Mandel is here for questions, I think, also. So welcome to the committee, and as you speak for the first time, just please identify yourself for the record, and Commissioner, are you starting?
I am. Madam Chair and members, I'm Dana Badgerill, the Commissioner of Administration, and it is my pleasure this afternoon to give you an update on a project that now is about 5 or 6 years old. In 2001, a pre-designed study was conducted for the need for an interior restoration of the state capitol. That pre-design looked at space needs, looked at the age of the mechanicals, and a number of other factors. In a couple of ensuing bonding periods, including last year's bonding bill, we received additional money. And last year, thank you all for $1 million to continue with the schematic design for the capitol. Just about a year ago, we held a competition, very hotly contested competition, for the design work on this wonderful building. The firm of Hamel, Green, and Abramson, a local firm, teamed with Suley Caldwell, an internationally known firm, but particularly known in their restoration of state capitol, won that competition. So for the last year, they've been working on refining the schematic design, and what they're going to present to you today, Michael Bjornberg is the principal project lead on that, and he'll be presenting to you the design work and the concepts that we have before you today. I just want to also mention Nancy Stark here from the Capitol Area Architectural and Planning Board to say that simply we have been working hand in glove with the CAP Board over the past year, and we bring this project to you really together in this spirit of cooperation. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Bjornberg.
Welcome, Mr. Bjornberg.
My name is Michael Bjornberg. Chairman, thank you. Members of the committee, thank you for having us here today to talk about the state capitol. It's been a pleasure over the last year to get into the history and understanding the state capitol and work on this legacy building. This is the agenda of what we're going through on my presentation, so you understand what's ahead. And if you have any questions or confusions as we go, please feel free to ask any questions. I'm going to go through historical background on it, just very brief. A project description as we understood it. Existing building issues as we found them. And we benchmarked other capitals, and we found that quite informative. I'm going to go through the design concept and then implementation of that concept. This is Cass Gilbert's original sketch, 1896, for the Minnesota State Capitol. Cass Gilbert, local architect, grew up not far from where the State Capitol was built, did a lot of buildings in the area, residential, church, all kinds of small buildings. This was the first building that launched his monumental career. During this, he moved to New York City and went on to do the U.S. Supreme Court, Customs House, and the Woolworth Building, which was the tallest building in the world at the time. When the legislature and Cass Gilbert got together and thought about this building, they decided this building was going to stand out as a state-of-the-art, most modern building in the state. It was the first fully electrified building in the state of Minnesota. It had elevators, telephones, it had fireproof construction, and it had something that was unique, which was a remote power plant. So it was everything that they could imagine of that day. It was built for $4.5 million, and then the other notions that they had was Minnesota was a young state. This building would symbolize progress, national prominence, and a permanence. So Minnesota was a player not only architecturally, but in national politics, and has proven to be everything of that and more. It's considered today one of the top state capitals in the country. So here it is today, a day very much like today, this photo. It's actually a year old. But Minnesota State Capitol, built out of Georgia marble, very striking on a day like this, but it's a 100-year-old building, so we must think about what we need to do ahead. We got into the project a year ago, interior restoration, we were told. Competed heavily for it. We're very pleased we won. Very pleased to have won it. Got into the building and you look around and it's gorgeous. So you wonder, how do you communicate that the building that looks like this needs a full interior restoration? And so that was one of the things we had to do. We found as we looked deeper into it that everything that's behind these walls, the systems that support it, are basically junk. Their systems are 40 years old and really need to be addressed comprehensively top to bottom. The other thing we discovered that in a restoration like this that's phased in an occupied building, you need a comprehensive plan for how you address the swing space and how, where people go. So that was the other thing we had to take on. And then the third thing we found, which was also a compelling issue we had to face, was how do you take a building that really has an odd assortment of constituents? It's a state's building that's located in St. Paul, which so it only has a few constituents supported in the Capitol here, but yet it's everybody's building, it's everybody's legacy. So no small task ahead.
And St. Paul is not claiming it as its project.
It should. Everybody should. So these are, we got into it and really dug deeper and found these were the primary issues we identified. Aging mechanical systems. And we've taken some people on tours to the building, and you can see a lot of these systems date back to 1960s. A lot has changed since then. They're energy inefficient systems. They're not code compliant systems. So your building, your state capital is not within current codes. Heating, venting, and air conditioning do not meet current standards either. We have outdated communication and technology systems. We have inadequate life safety systems in the building. We also have outdated security systems. We have a lack of visitor services and amenities. Over 300,000 people visit this building every year. It's largely manned by one desk on the main floor. We have building accessibility issues. We have a Supreme Court and Senate chambers that are inaccessible. We have restrooms that are inaccessible. We have physical deterioration and damage. And I'll show you some instances of that. Moisture damage is considered the number one enemy of an old building, and this building has plain moisture damage. And we have a lack of adequate hearing rooms in the building as well. So those are the issues we had to deal with. So we start with mechanical systems. This is the building infrastructure. And these are some of the areas we've taken people on tours, and we will take you on some of these areas as well. This shows you the condition of a lot of these the lower levels. This room right here is one of the highlights on our tour. It's the backbone of the building, essentially. It's where the main electrical systems come in play. It's where the main fire control systems are. To get to the main fire control panel, which is back here, you climb up over the fire pump and get back there. There's very little emergency systems in this room or emergency lighting. So very difficult to get in and maintain. Here's your communication and technology systems behind the walls of this building. And here's another one. Good luck getting into this area. And then here's some of the chilled water coming in the building. These are not worst-case scenarios. These are just typical pictures inside the building. This is a picture from Kansas State Capitol, where they built new mechanical rooms outside the building. Concrete vaults, easy to get at and maintain, inexpensive spaces to build. And you can see here the amount of room and the air volume that moves through these ductworks. So these are outside the building, and then here you can see over on the right side, this is where it moves into the existing building. So these are built outside the existing Capitol building and then serve the building. Life safety and security, key issues these days. This is an example in the northeast corner of the building. There are two fresh air intakes like this one right here. This one's sort of a unique one. It's also by the loading dock, so anybody who pulls up and waits at the loading dock, the building occupants know the truck's back there. You can see the car right here. You can imagine on a day like today or the day we've had lately, somebody wants that car warm. This sucks up that exhaust fume right immediately. This is the way fresh air is currently brought into the building in most cases. So we need to address the fresh air, and we need to also address this loading dock situation. Vehicle proximity and access. These days, vehicle proximity to major public buildings is looked at seriously. We have cars that are parked right up against the building, not only in the back, but in the front as well. And then here you can see a van unloading under the porch here in the front of the building. We're looking at ways we eliminate that proximity to the building. This is a picture of the State Capitol Tunnel area. We're all very familiar. This is how we connect to the various buildings on the State Capitol Complex. Here are some of those wires and technology systems that not only serve this building, but serve the Capitol Complex, running right through the top of the tunnel. And then here's the kind of a typical corridor shot back to the elevators. You've got things stored in the corridor. You've got ductwork crossing it. Physical deterioration and damage. This building has suffered greatly from moisture damage. A lot of that you can see up in the third floor areas. I think we're all familiar with that as we look up. There are areas we'll take you on a tour that down in the basement. For that water that's coming in through the roof areas is also getting all the way down to the basement. So it's penetrating deeply throughout the entire building. We also have drain pipes and storm pipes and sewer pipes that run down those walls that are 100 years old, cracking and losing water. We have clean water. We have brown water down in the basement levels. We have mechanical equipment leaking water. So we have plenty of water down there to deal with.
Representative Erdahl has a question to that slide.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you have mold problems then?
Chairman Representative Erdahl, if you have water infiltration in the building, you have mold problems.
Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Madam Chair. One more. Any asbestos in the Capitol?
Mr. Bjornberg?
Chairman, Representative Erdahl, I'm sure we do have some left over. There has been a large mitigation effort that's occurred over the years, but the pipes and things that are in the walls that have been inaccessible probably still contain asbestos. So, yes, that was something we should address as well. Okay, thank you.
Continue.
Thank you. Deterioration. Here's some shots of just general areas where you can, as you walk around, you'll notice there's a general deterioration around the building, the pavement that's breaking up. Since the mid-80s, 60% of the funds dedicated to this building have been emergency quick fix funds. Not long-term solutions, not addressing the symptoms, but how do we deal with something that's broken right now? We want to look beyond this and try to solve those symptoms. Visitor services amenities. The most public building in the state, unarguably. The most noted building in the state. And this is the visitor accommodations for that building. Staff people trained to incredible tours every hour. They're wonderful tours. But this is where all the school kids come in, and this is where everybody comes for a tour. There are better ways to handle this, more organized ways to handle this, and we can do that. This is also, for information, the first point of security when you come into the building. It wasn't that long ago, a couple months ago, where somebody came up to this desk with a machete and asked to see the governor. So it's not quite the way you want to deal with security. Not supposed to be a joke. Accessibility. Moving right along. Accessibility. The building is largely inaccessible, as I said, and that is a federal law, not a code. So we need to look more at code compliance or ADA compliance in this building. That includes restrooms, that includes exit stairs, and it includes the chambers. And the hearing rooms. This is a wonderful hearing room we're in here today. I don't think there's a hearing room this well equipped over in the state capitol. Most of the hearing rooms in the capitol have numerous columns, G15 being the largest one, has many columns. And this other one up here you can see up in the top, the columns in here. They're wonderful probably for sitting at the desk as a legislator. As somebody participating in the government and watching proceedings, they're very difficult. So we're looking at how we add hearing rooms and improve the hearing rooms over there. So with all that, as we look at addressing mechanical issues, as we look at addressing exit stairs, there are currently no enclosed exit stairs in this building. We look at adding restrooms, men's and women's restrooms on every floor. We are short of space in the Capitol. That was addressed in 2001 pre-design and confirmed in our 2006 pre-design. So we look at National Park Service guidelines for how you address this in an old building and when an addition should be considered. There are three ways to approach it. In a historic building, exterior additions. And this building does not lend itself very well to a wing. We would not recommend adding a wing to Kath Gilbert's building. There are other exterior additions. You could consider this building we're in today, a state office building, to be an exterior addition, or the judicial building. As we got into this further, we found there really is no appetite for another state office building adjacent to the Capitol. So we moved away from that one. The next one is what we call found space, exploring found space.
Representative Murphy has
Would you please explain a little bit more about there is no appetite for another building, another office building near the state capitol?
Mr. Bjornberg?
Chairman and Representative Murphy. Thank you. I believe the language when we started, precluded us from exploring a new office building. And in the prior history, as we got into this, found a new office building located north of the Capitol did not have political support.
Representative Murphy?
Madam
Chair, Mr. Bjornberg, your previous study, where does this new, where does this information about there being no appetite evolve from?
I think, Commissioner, this committee is having its first introduction to this, and so I think some history may have occurred, perhaps just with senators or in another context, and so I think even that discussion, we would appreciate some information on that.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Murphy and others, I did gloss over that at the beginning of this hearing, and I apologize if I gave it short shrift. This is a project that has really been in the works for well over 5 years. There was originally authorized in the bonding bill of 2000, I believe, a small amount of money to do a pre-design study. And that pre-design study, again, talked with all the current occupants of the Capitol and looked at the needs for a renovation. It looked at the age of the mechanical systems and all of the other issues associated with the Capitol and made some recommendations. Chief among those recommendations was the fact that given the space required for today's code-compliant mechanical systems, there was not room in the current state capitol to accommodate all of the needs, including the needs for additional hearing rooms and including the needs for additional offices. So the tentative recommendation of that study was that another state office building be built, ideally to the north of the capitol, at a cost of about $80 million to accommodate. Then I understand, and I wasn't here at the time, and maybe Ms. Stark can help elaborate on this, but the language then that appeared in a subsequent bonding bill authorizing the schematic design specifically restricted that so that it was not allowed to be used for any expansion or further additions. So what was the language in particular, Nancy, if you remember?
Ms. Stark? Madam Chair, members of the committee, it was that though there were two scenarios to the 2001 pre-design, the language was very specific that no design work could take any of the functions going on inside the Capitol, outside of the building, into another building on the Capitol or within the Capitol district. So that was the specifics of the language.
Thank
did
you.
Did you have a question?
Yeah. Yeah, following up on Representative Murphy, I think this is an interesting discussion and exactly the one that this committee and the administration needs to have. I'm looking at your little packet here, and we see a $260 million total price tag on this, which is, you know, kind of phenomenal and takes your breath away when you look at it. You know, the thinking here, I think, in the House is to explore in a meaningful way, not to take a position one way or another, but to explore what the alternatives are. I will grant you politically, I think the Senate would have a totally different view on this than the House. And I would also point out that there's been other groups that have left the Capitol. I mean, the Supreme Court no longer, and they meet there for historical purposes only a day or two a week, but most of their business is done in a new building in the complex. And when you look at this building that we're housed in, this was never meant for modern-day committee hearings and office setup. We struggle with office space on both sides of the aisle. This whole interior of this building used to be an open courtyard. We still have water problems that occur every single year in here. And we don't have cable running through this place. We don't even have, you know, wireless internet, which is another concern. All our hearing rooms aren't equipped downstairs. We couldn't have this meeting. We don't have cameras. We can't even get the overhead projectors to work, for heaven's sakes. So, I mean, there's a lot of concern on both ends. And what other states have done, and I've seen them, I think Arizona, when you travel, I like to go to state houses, a lot of folks have said, well, let's do something that's state-of-the-art for both bodies. Let's put up a new state office building, which in the long run would be much less costly than trying to retrofit an old structure like that for committees, for offices, for technology, and then look at what the Capitol really needs if those functions aren't required in there. And what does that do to the price tag? And might it even be more beneficial in the long run to look at something entirely different than what we're talking about here? So I think
That's at least my opinion of what this committee should be looking at and discussing. It's not just, well, we need to retrofit it because the senators are over there and they really need some nice digs to make things work for them. But what does the Capitol really need as a structure, a historic structure, for visitors and other things? And then what are our needs, both House and Senate and other agencies, for their needs in office space? And I think that's what we're trying to discover. And I don't want to take Representative Murphy's luster away, but I think that's what she was kind of getting at, too, that who politically said we shouldn't look at anything else.
And Representative Murphy, I should have gone back to you one more time. I didn't know if you had a follow-up.
Well, I kind of did, Madam Chair. I've been on this committee since it was created, and obviously this was in bonding bills that you're referring to. And I perhaps should have been following that more closely, obviously, since this was brand new to me 3 weeks ago. But I've been, you know, intimately involved in change at the Capitol. I was co-chair of the House Restoration Committee when the House went back to the original and we retrofitted the house into the way it is today. And I thought I was pretty much in the know and was being updated on things, but obviously I wasn't. But I can't imagine a committee that would go forth without input from the body. Now, were previous bonding committees represented by the previous chairs of the bonding committee in the last 4 years on making these decisions and following this, developing this plan?
Who would like to handle that? Ms. Starr?
Madam Chair, members, I'll attempt a stab at that. One of the things that the pre-design set was a plan to restore immediately within the Capitol building. And that's why in last year's bonding session, the Cap Board came with a proposal to take a look at restoration wing by wing and then include the rotunda. When we went about getting a new design team, it was very imperative at that time, and going back to the 2001 pre-design, that all the spaces that were required for not only restoration, but just thinking in terms of the next 50 years of use or the next 10 years of use in the Capitol, those spaces did not exist. And that language came through to limit the design team, to not allow them to design a building elsewhere on the campus, but take a look specifically in the Capitol building. And that's why the design team was very creative in not only satisfying the infrastructure of the building being able to be brought up to code and expanding, but also to expand the spaces that were necessary. And they are spaces that all the legislature will benefit from, but most importantly, the public will benefit from. The public will have spaces that are up to code, that are accessible, and that will aid them in watching the governance that you all are creating. So, limited by the language that we couldn't take the design to a building elsewhere on campus to take some of these functions, the design team was created in coming out with the new space that Michael would like to continue to show you.
Madam Chair, Ms. Stark, and I appreciate what you're saying, and I remember the Cap Board representatives being in my office and talking about the need for money for the planning and design and so forth. And Mr. Bjornberg, I appreciate that you're trying to get ahead, but I'm trying to just go back a little bit to who represented the House of Representatives on this design team, or giving input to the design team.
Madam Chair, yes, members, when the design team was selected, an advisory committee was selected along with the design team. Some of the members in the design selection were part of what we call the advisory committee. I'm getting a little stumbled here. The advisory committee for this particular design was made up of tenants within the building. We also had legislators. Two of the legislators on this committee were invited guests of the advisory committee. So two members of the House, two members of the Senate, and we began to unfold the process of design to the advisory committee. Now, granted, staff members have perhaps spent a little more time in the base programming of the spaces within the Capitol, but you folks had representatives of your staff as part of those being interviewed for the pre-design and ultimately this design. So that is the representation we had. We were also working from last session over the summer months through a year of elections. It's been very difficult to get a lot of members to participate, but we have carried the design forward and we are about ready to bring out the pre-design, the official.
Oh, Madam Chair, I realize that I was in the minority at the time, too, and so it's not likely that we would have been consulted a whole lot. But I'm pleased to hear that we did have representation from somebody, but we're not being told who it was. But we can go back in the minutes and get that information. But our space over there is a good share of that building. That second floor, over that second floor wing, is the house space where we have our caucuses and that whole office space, and then room 316 and the where the lobbyists are. That's all house space. And in addition to the house chamber, that's a good share of the Capitol building. And it seems to me that we should have had more say in this whole thing, but I'll be quiet now. But I just can't believe that this committee wasn't more involved in a $260 million plan for the space that at least that we can control. And certainly we certainly have the numbers over there, 134 of us. We should have some of the pipes and some of the water, and some of that should be our responsibility also. And we should have a committed people that attend and input and report back. And maybe that's what the problem is that during this time we haven't had anybody report back. And we've also had a change in chairs of this committee over, you know, there was Chair Krenke, and there was Chair Dorman, there was Chair Krenke, and there was Chair Knobloch, all before that. But, gosh, if I had been told we were in the midst of planning a $260 million plan, my ears sure would have perked up, and I would have asked for who was representing me and the other 133 members of the House of Representatives.
And committee, I do think that just having watched this in the last year or two, that getting to this conclusion has been relatively recent, because even as late as last year, I think the discussion still was among the senators, were they going to move out during construction, or were they going to, literally at one point they were suggesting they would just have their desks in the hallways. And so what we're seeing today is a totally different approach. And so, you know, my sense is that the discussion was often among the senators about were they going to move to another building or not, and that was a more kind of practical discussion, but at any rate, I think where we are today is of relatively recent. Representative Mahoney, we've got four people up ready to ask questions.
Thank you. I'm very grateful that Representative Murphy went before me because she handled some of the questions that I was going to ask much more gracefully than I would have. But I do want, you know, I have some serious concerns about a $260 million building, but I do want to caution the committee that before we go off thinking about a new building off, you know, outside of the state office, the state capitol building, the state capitol, and there's another member or two here that is does construction or has been involved in it, we members would understand that the dollar figure, although it might be changed, I don't think it would go down to build another building off-site and then remodel the state capitol building because, I've worked in a couple of mechanical rooms just like those, and, you know, you can make it work, but the Kansas one sure made my heart go pitter-patter. and actually, that's almost what you have to do. I mean, the building is so old, the mold and the water infiltration, we do have to do a lot of work to it. I'm not sure, having been involved in a number of construction projects, that the idea of rebuilding that building while someone is using it is a good idea. And I would be prone to, at some point if passed, to recommend that you go back and rethink this. Because
members, I will say when they finish their presentation, you will see the staging of that. I have right now Carlson, Wagenius, Lanning. Did I miss any? People who wanted to ask questions. Representative Carl.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think what we're hearing is that there's a desire on the part of the House to have a better understanding of what this process was. I think that's what both Representative Murphy and Chunky were saying. The question I have right now, and maybe we can revert back to that after the architect has done, question is, when you say the tenants of the Capitol had a lot of input, we are one of the tenants, and I think you're hearing from the House that there's some concern that we as a tenant, because a lot of that is House-based, may not have had the input that others might have had, and I don't know if you can assure us now that that was the case, because when you talk about two senators and two representatives, you refer to them as advisory, and I think that's a different conversation, perhaps, than what you might have had with the so-called tenants. You've heard about the tenants, and there is a contract. I don't know how many people are aware of that. It exists between the House and the Senate, at least, relative to capital space. I was quite involved with that whole discussion when we remodeled this building, and there was discussion about some of the work being done in the Senate. And I don't know where that contract would be, or that agreement. I'm calling it a contract. It might be under some other name, but who has what space and who controls it and who gave it up temporarily for certain purposes and had retained rights to reclaim it. And there's just all kinds of side issues that go into this from the standpoint of the House. And I did have a question a little bit later in terms of the new space and how that was going to be equitably divided between House and Senate when you talk about the hearing rooms and the office space. But if we could at least get a little feel for who the tenants were that were consulted.
Ms. Stark?
Yes.
Question about the tenants?
Madam Chair, members, I would point out that the tenants representing the House were your staff, Gail Romanowski, Al Mathewitz, Don Crosby, and you, Madam Chair, and Representative Dean, were members, invited members of the Advisory Committee, along with Senator Ress and former Senator Cal Larson. And also on our CAP board, is the representative, Mary Liz Holberg, and she has seen the presentation twice.
Representative Carlson, did you have a follow-up?
Well, Madam Chair, I know who represented the House as a tenant. I'm not sure how that was authorized or whether they were authorized to be spokespersons for the House or not. But at least there was someone representing us. I would like to get more information while I have the floor, though, about that agreement in terms of who controls what space, and maybe the architect, when we get to that point, can tell us how the new space is going to be divided between House, Senate, and Governor. I assume the court probably won't have any of that space, being that they've got their own building these days. So I'll stop there, Madam Chair.
Representative Wagenius.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm looking at your button that says Preserve History, and your book that says Preserve History, and I feel very strongly that we should be doing that. And so we have so little in terms of historical buildings around here, so little. But the Ford building strikes me as a building that we have, and I don't know how that fit into your discussions, and I would like to know how that fit into your discussions, because we certainly have a tunnel to that building and it has some historical significance.
Madam Chair and Representative Wagenius, you may remember that Representative Loeffler had a proposal last year that didn't make it all the way through, but it was in fact to renovate the Ford building as use as for swing space, for when the Senate and others are displaced from the Capitol during the period of renovation. That $13 to $15 million is very, very basic. The building essentially has no heat plant today. It is literally mothballed. You may also remember that there was a legislatively mandated study on the use of the Ford building that former Representative Rhodes chaired, and a number of members of this body sat on that committee that looked at the possible uses for the Ford building. And so there is a report that we can provide you that talks about the future of the Ford building. The recommendation at that time, of course, was that we ought to continue to preserve it, which we have been doing, and that we ought to look for the highest and best use. I believe one of the recommendations was that it would be either a wonderful customer service center or a location for small agencies and boards. And I think those are really good, viable first new uses for that building. What didn't seem all that viable, if we had an alternative, was to renovate a building just for the purpose of swing space. And I think one of the beauties of this proposal, as we get through it, as you'll see the phasing, is that no one ever really needs to move out of the Capitol. Session can be held in the Capitol for every single one of the 6 years, or three of the 6 years, that the project would be going forward. There's room within the plan for alternate chambers, for alternate offices and so forth. So we've avoided the necessity of that investment in the Ford building. We'll defer it. I believe we need to come up with a plan for that building. I would rather refurbish that building than build a new one, for example. And I think that would be more economical and certainly more environmentally efficient. But we don't have that on the table today. It is not part of this plan.
And that is sad that it is not part of the plan, not as a swing space, but as a real and useful space for us. Because, again, I look at what we're doing is not preserving history. This is not about preserving history. So I reject this button as what we're doing here. We're changing history, and that is a little problematic. And I'll tell you that from a very different perspective. And I usually don't talk about this, but I actually grew up in Washington, D.C., where people really did preserve history. And the most troubling thing about moving to Minnesota was our lack of caring for and preserving old buildings. And I see that lack with the Ford building, which could be a magnificent addition. But we don't have the real attitude yet of preserving history in Minnesota.
just go to the East Coast and come in and look around. Come back to Minnesota and look around. And I see a lost opportunity here.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank Representative Murphy and Representative Junkie for raising the question as a new member of this committee. The direction that you were given just kind of hit me in the face. Frankly, I couldn't believe it. You've done what you were told to do. And we can't find fault with you because you were following directions, but I guess I would really seriously question the direction that they've been given. To me, the top priority here is restoring that building. And obviously, I certainly readily understand that a wing added onto a historic building of that significance is going to destroy some of the significance of that building. And I also recognize that everything that's there now isn't going to fit. And so we're going to have to be looking at other alternatives. How do we accommodate all of our needs? And I'm willing to listen to the rest of your presentation here, but I guess I just come to the conclusion that what we need is a timeout. We need to review this direction that's been given and see if we can't come to a better set of directions. This road we're on, I think, is problematic, and we need a timeout.
And Representative Peterson. Okay. Why don't we just proceed with the presentation and see if we can get through that, and then we'll still have time for more questions.
Christy?
Please.
Okay. I just wanted to add before I do get going that we have all along the way not only involved House and Senate, all the other tenants and historical societies in our review of this project. So we're trying to cover all of the bases of it. And as we look at the options, a new building not only brings with it office space and hearing rooms, it brings with it lobbies, restrooms, elevators, and all those other things that support that building, the mechanical systems. If you were to build a new building, you would still have to come back to the existing Capitol building, address all the mechanical systems. You would have to address all the existing issues in that building. About all that we would take out of that building that we don't have in this plan is some office space. And to build that office space, take that piece out and build a new building with that, you would spend considerably more. You would also have the cost of that building and the connections and the overhead costs of maintaining it. So I'll continue. So I was talking about how we do add those spaces and talked about the exterior additions was one we were at. Found space was another one. One example I'd give to understand found space is a Rathskeller kitchen expanded under the north scale of the building. It expanded, no impact, no aesthetic impact on the existing building, but you gain space. There are other opportunities within this capital to find found space. One of the things that makes that very difficult is all that there are 28 individual air handling units within the basement of this of the Capitol building. Those take up space, and they're in spaces that they shouldn't be in. If we can move those outside of the building, it makes phasing and staging of the building much more efficient. Another large area we found for found space is under the south stair. Similar to the small area under the north, south stair offers an opportunity. So this is the whole notion of found space is one we look at very seriously. And then lastly was underground. One of the things that we're able to do is so many state capitals are about the same era, we're able to benchmark what other Capitol buildings are doing and how they're facing these same kinds of issues. And if you look at them, you'll find many of them are doing modest underground expansions to address the visitor needs and the mechanical needs of the building. So we've looked at that as well. The U.S. Capitol has had many exterior additions, and they're currently undergoing a major underground visitor center expansion with House and Senate space as well. And we look benchmark costs. This one is about $666 million and counting. So that the notion of adding space out in front of the building and then modest accessible entrances is one that you find typically throughout a lot of the Capitol buildings. Virginia State Capitol, a building by Thomas Jefferson. Here's the original building in the center, Temple on the Hill. a couple of wings that were added later. It's half the size of our building, so you can imagine the space crunch they're in. They also looked out in front of their building, built an underground addition, and then they have, again, a visitor entrance that's at grade. All the visitors come, accessible, convenient. And Kansas, our partner Schooley Caldwell are working on Kansas. It is also a phased project, which gives us a very easy way to understand how phased construction works. This wing is just finished. This wing is right now in construction, and the other wing is in planning stages. So a very good example of how do you manage planning state capital and implementing a restoration while it's occupied. They've done it in a way where the existing building has four corner quads of new. I showed you one of those mechanical room shots earlier. These are those mechanical rooms. They're set up prior to the building restoration. You put in the new systems, you feed into the existing building. And then they've also done an underground expansion out in front of the building that has the loading dock, visitor services, support, cafeteria, dining, all of those things that help support the building. So here's a photo rendering of it with the new expansion out in front, accessible entrance, and then below is a shot as it's now being prepared for stone on the front of the building. So the whole experience of the plaza up on top remains as it was, untouched, historically, aesthetically. And that brought us to our building. As we look at some of the benchmarks, not only those three capitals, but many other capitol buildings, and we look at some of the issues we're facing on this capitol building. How do we address base construction? How do we address mechanical systems throughout the building that need replacement? And how do we look forward to the next 100 years? So legacy building has been with us, and it will be with us. We want to look past the 5 or 10 year solution. Here's a couple site plans I'll show you. This is the existing site plan of the building. Aurora Avenue down below here. The parking lot's north of the building, and here's the main stair. Now, this is a preliminary site plan we looked at where we pushed the parking underground, we pushed the loading dock underground, we grassed over those areas, we build mechanical vaults on the north side as well, and then we do a small expansion that's right out and that's underneath the hill in front of the Capitol. We bend Aurora down below, and then we have accessible entrances to that area. I'm going to quickly show you diagrammatically the differences between the existing lower level of the building and the proposed lower level of this building. Back here is the Raskeller, north side of the building. Above here is the south stair of the building. This is a tunnel that we know that runs right through the center of the building. What's interesting about these buildings is the way they're structured is the structure you see in the upper floors comes down all the way to the ground. They're held up by gravity. So center area here, as you can start to look underneath, here's a rotunda space similar to what you find above. Here's the corridor system that wraps similar to what you find on the ground and first floors. All that space is captured in there and described. We can come in and find that space. We can move those 28 individual air handling units out of that lower level. We move them into vaults north and south of the building and open up this space. As we talked about a new building, this is a strategy we want to employ even if you built a new building. You want to get those mechanical systems out of the building and into vaults that are better utilized for it. This is expensive space for mechanical units. So we move mechanical vaults here. We do underground shipping, loading, and receiving areas. We do mechanical vaults here and underground VIP drop-off and parking. Then we open up the area in the center of the building, similar to what you find above. We take the metal stairs out. We add new grand stairs. We open up the rotunda space on this floor. Underneath the south stair, we do a large meeting room. We're looking at that also as being used for interim use for House chambers and Senate chamber use. Long term, it's a room that's divided up into meeting rooms. And then we have office space below over here. Underneath this, mechanical vaults, and then House and Senate media studios.
To that point, Representative Martinez?
Yes, when you talked about the large meeting room, in terms of it's set up like a hearing room, how many members could you have in, and I ask this for a very specific reason, I'll tell you the reason. I want to know how many members you can accommodate in a hearing room. It's very difficult for us to hold joint meetings, mm-hmm. House and Senate committee meetings. Because there is no space, and so we wanted to hold a joint hearing last week, and we had only one option, and that was the chamber, which I don't. It's not. That's not what we ought to be doing for everything. That's for that one event that works. but for a hearing where we can ask questions just as we're asking you questions. How many members can you get in a group like this, in that large hearing room?
Mr. Bjornberg.
Madam Chairman, Representative Wagenius, we see a capacity of at least 500 people in that space, and then divisible again down into smaller pieces. I was just reviewing designs for that this morning and looking at how we set it up interim. So not only we have a chamber space, we have retire room space, and we have conference room space off of that as well. And then it becomes a Senate chamber and set up for that. And then long term it's used for major public addresses, speeches, things like that in the building.
Senator Guineas? But that's an auditorium. I'm looking at a hearing room that has to have something where members can sit around and have their microphones and be able to talk to other folks. I mean, I have never seen the need for an auditorium here, but I have so many times seen the need for a large hearing room where we can have 50, 75 members doing a hearing together. But that's not what it sounds like.
That's a suggestion, I think.
Thank you. Okay. Continue?
Please.
Okay. All right. All right, back up a little bit. One of the other things we do, I think that's fairly significant, is we take the tunnel that bisects the building and we move it south of the building. We remove it from the entire state capitol itself. That allows us to open up that center of the building. This sketch here is from the Kansas project, but it's very similar in the sense of you have a tunnel running in front of the building. This is the face of the state capitol, the Kansas state capitol. But you bring natural light down into these spaces, so you get borrowed light into those other office spaces off of that, and you also have the opportunity to orient yourself as you move through that tunnel.
And the water will dry up.
This is that larger plan. Probably see this a little bit easier. We have the main entrances in here, a lobby space, so those busloads of kids can come in. There's restrooms for them. There's a classroom. There's historical society offices. There's the meeting room space, the visible meeting room again. So if you want four, if you want two, if you want it as a large one, you have that flexibility. We have the tunnel space running along here, right where the existing, this is right underneath the existing Port Crozier space I showed you earlier in a photo. Here's the public space, the rotunda space, the new grand stairs that bring you down into this area. We have mechanical vault space. We have the underground parking. We have security in this area. We have mechanical vaults over here, receiving, and then plant management. We have press offices. We have one, two, three additional hearing rooms on this floor as well. We have additional dining space. We restore the judicial dining room, which is now in very rough shape. We add student dining space. In this area, the governor's dining room restore, and we have additional private dining in there. So we greatly expand the dining, as well as the orientation of how you move through the building. We also have male and female restrooms on every floor and in close exit stairs. This is a section through the building that shows that notion of the found space. Here's the stair, the grand south stair that we have now in the building. Here's where Aurora Avenue currently is. We move that down. But here's that space then we try to create underneath that stair. Here's the found space in the basement level. This is a model and a construction photo underneath the Kansas stair. Ours is bigger than theirs, but this gives you a notion of when you open that space up and restructure it, the kind of volume you can get inside those rooms. This is a corridor, one of our state capitol corridors. It could be most of the state capitol corridors you see. The wonderful stone walls of the structure, and then all the stuff stored in the corridors. Well, this is a sketch of what they did in Kansas to those areas. So much better space. And you also have a better sense of the historic nature of the building. So the underground additions we're talking about, back here, receiving, mechanical, secure parking drop-off, and mechanical. And then we have office space in these areas underneath this wing. And this wing are the mechanical spaces that support the front of the building and the large entry area. And then we also have House and Senate media space as well as IT support back home. So those spaces occur right here is a vault in the back. Here's a mechanical vault underneath that office and meeting room space. So What we're trying to do then is look long-term for this building. We're trying to update the mechanical systems, get energy-efficient systems in this building, code-compliant systems, heating, venting, and air conditioning that meets modern
standards. Dr. Bougini has another question.
Okay. Oh, well, I will ask it now. You've talked about parking several times with light rail through this area. What are your connections with light rail, and how is that incorporated into the design?
Commissioner?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Wagenius. There are 183 surface parking spaces today in and around the Capitol grounds. Those spaces will all be removed. The Homeland Security Report strongly recommends the standoff distance prohibits parking in the vicinity of a building like this. So what we have told the people who are currently parking in 83 spots is that for the period of construction, we will relocate them all to the Department of Administration ramp, which is connected by tunnels. So as an interim solution to their parking needs, we will move them all to that ramp and displace the admin people, including myself, probably to Lot Q. But what we really owe this legislature, and what we really owe ourselves, and certainly our public who visits the Capitol, is a more comprehensive approach to parking. Here we are with this proposal, inviting a lot of people to come to the Capitol, and then we make it very, very difficult for them to park. A key element of that is, just as you've mentioned, the role of Central Corridor in this whole scene. We are very closely tied in with the Central Corridor people. We understand the current plans to bring it down University Avenue with a stop, I believe, currently at Rice, but that can change and be fluid. We need to stay very closely in tune with what Central Corridor does, where the stops are, how we're connected to them, either underground or above ground. And we need to then devise our ultimate parking plan based on how that Central Corridor affects our commuting patterns. So we would do a study of impact on commuting patterns, and we would be back to you with a plan, certainly first of all for increased visitor parking.
Follow up, Representative Kinney.
Seems that we are not concentrating enough. I mean, I hear you're saying we're going to pay attention to the Central Corridor, but rather than having parking be so integral, it's transit that should be integral. I mean, we're moving into a different era, and if we're going to be leaders in moving into a different era where we have to have a smaller carbon footprint, where we have to have a lot more efficiency, then it seems to me that the predominant discussion should be on how we use the Central Corridor and buses, not the predominant discussion being on how we make sure there's as much parking as there always was.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering, you might get a little bit more support if you figure out a way to put a direct connection from the House retiring room to the Senate retiring room. Just kidding. A little lighter note here.
I think we are near the end. If you can push on to the end, yep. And then we can...
I will do something. Thank you. Flexible communication and technology systems that not only update it for today, but allow updating in the future in a much more efficient manner than now. We improve life safety systems in the building, and we improve the security systems. We look at visitor services and amenities, and we have much better accommodation for those visitors to this Capitol. Currently, that does not exist. We look at building accessibility and address that. We address the building deterioration, and we look at adequate hearing rooms. So that's the plan. Then the notion is, how do you do that? How do you get it done? And that's been one of the stumbling blocks in the past, is how do you really manage to do this? So we've implementation. First step of this construction, we look at ideally starting this in September 2008, would be the underground expansions of the Capitol that allow us then to set up the infrastructure for the rest of the building. So we do the areas north of the Capitol and the areas south of the Capitol. So that's 2 years. The second two-year phase would be the east wing and the north wing. Supreme Court does hold court in here the first week of every month, and they feel very strongly about their presence in this building. They have said they would stay in their building through the 2 years of construction. So then we accommodate the House chambers in that space out front. We take those two on for 2 years. And then the final 2 years of the six-year cycle is the west wing and the rotunda space. Here's an early exterior sketch showing Aurora Avenue moved from here where it currently is down under down here below the existing stairways. New entrances in at these levels, and then more grass out in front here. This experience moving up the stairway into the rotunda still remains as it always has been and still is a monumental experience. And we also have more plaza space out here for public gatherings and demonstrations. Okay, I want to finish up with just a couple items on the implementation, which is also cost and benchmarking.
Representative Murphy has a question.
Okay.
I couldn't get where the senators paused.
Commissioner? Chair, Representative Murphy, I think you might have just been out of the room when we just covered it. 183 people currently park around the grounds of the Capitol. We will remove all of that parking. There will be 12 VIP spots underneath the Capitol. They can either be used as permanent parking for VIPs or simply as drop-off. But we will have to we will accommodate the senators and others who park on the Capitol grounds in the administration ramp, which is connected by tunnel.
Thank you.
Representative Solberg.
Chair, that's a short-term solution to construction. I think for many, many years that I've been around here, in the State Department's bill, we always had a little rider that said that senators could not park on Aurora Avenue. And never were able to get it past the Senate for some reason. But Representative Wagenius is correct, probably, in some respects of trying to put transit into the mix of things. But there's an awful lot of people that come from outside of the metropolitan area that want to be able to participate in our legislative sessions. And I know we have peaks where we need parking in the legislative session, and then we don't. But right now we have zero accommodations for them, for that type of person to come in. And to remove them and then give us 12 and then say, well, on a temporary basis, I didn't hear where the senators were going to park after the construction or where the plan was for the public to be able to park.
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and Representative Silver, we believe that we need to do a better job to provide public parking right now. And we will be looking at a number of ways to do that, not the least of which is improved signage. One of the other things we're looking at, the state of Iowa has just implemented, which is off-site parking with a commuter van back and forth to ferry people. Not an ideal solution, but we've just got to make this place more accessible to the public for now until we have more public transit opportunities. But senators, the issue of putting senators park on a permanent basis is really, we will accommodate them in the admin ramp until 2014. Because this is a six-year period of construction, we really won't be settled in and around the premises. We won't be moving fully in everyone into their final offices and configurations until 2014. So we have a little bit of time to come up with that plan that I suggested earlier. It won't take that long. I promise you we'll be back within probably the next year with a much more comprehensive plan based on where we think Central Corridor is going. And that's just something we owe you.
So you, Chair, just one other thing. As we look at this particular proposal that's before us, do you expect that this will be in the governor's proposal? Recommendations to us?
Commissioner?
Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, as you know, it was not in the governor's bonding proposal. But by my presence here, I am signaling that the governor believes very strongly we have to preserve this building. And his position is that the bonding proposals put forth this year were emergencies and the prior agreed to Duluth Event Center. So he does not have it in his budget proposals this year. It does not signal that he doesn't believe we badly need to restore the Capitol and certainly preserve it in respect to the mechanicals and other changes.
Madam Chair, just one other additional point. Do we have any kind of an idea of what the cost would be for your last part of your sentence of the preservation of it, of doing the things that are needed to be done to stop the water flow and to do the mechanical things that seem to be the efficiencies that we're not. Do we have an idea of, instead of coming out with underneath the front part and all those type of things? Do you have some kind of an idea on that?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Solberg, I believe Mr. Gornberg was just about to go through the costs in more detail and give you a little more context for those costs in terms of what these, they look astounding, I know that, but to put them in the context of other state capital renovations. I think he can better comment on the mechanical costs versus the other amenities.
Okay, then I'll...
Mr. Gornberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We looked at benchmarking some other capitals. There are two currently underway. Virginia State Capital is $150 million. Kansas is underway is $230 million. Wisconsin recently completed $266 million. U.S. Capital I mentioned is $666 million. And Texas is $566 million, where they moved everybody out and then did it and moved them back in. As we looked at costs, the way we came with a cost estimate on this project, we had initial conceptual design. We pulled in two local contractors, and we pulled in local subcontractors in conjunction with an estimating firm and our in-house estimator. And we sat and we looked over all this project. We looked at all the contingencies. We looked at trying to understand what the impacts were. We came up with a total construction cost of $153 million. That breaks down into the expansion space at $65 million and the existing building at $86 million. Now, some of that expansion space, the majority of that expansion space, also supports the existing capital restoration. Now, added to the $153 million, we had owner's costs of $40 million, which includes site preparation. I think there's on the handout, I listed what those were. And phasing premium, which is as we go from phase to phase, making sure we get people in and out safely, accommodate the chambers in the meeting area, those sorts of things. That's $5 million. Escalation was $62 million. As we looked at this project, we found escalation was a significant factor in this. Each year of delay adds another $20 million to the project. So that was a total project cost of $260 million, which we felt put us well in the range of what state capital benchmarking is.
Representative Mahoney. Thank you, Madam Chair. In your cost, in remodeling, often you run into unexpected contingencies. Is that included in your estimate?
Mr. Gornberg.
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, we have covered that, and I've actually, working with the estimators and the contractors, we found that happy medium. Theirs was much higher, and I said, no, here's what we know, and the more we got into it, I think we're at a point now where everybody's very comfortable that we have contingencies, we have line items for each of those so we can track those. We've also looked at a delivery method for this project, bringing on a construction manager and doing construction manager at risk delivery, where we bring on a construction manager early on in the design process. At the end of design development, they give us a guaranteed maximum price. At that point, the state's risk is pretty well is mitigated. So I think that's the other way we try to handle that. But yeah, we've got contingencies and we've got line items so we know what we can track. So we also can track that from here forward.
Okay. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for Commissioner Badgero. I'm just a little concerned because we have a leaky dome. So, and we're looking at other projects in the state this year, for instance, the state colleges and universities that have a leaky roof, and those are considered emergency projects. And to me, a leaky dome would be comparable to that, and I'm wondering, do we have a figure for that, and do we have a reason why that's not in the emergency bonding bill for this year?
Commissioner. Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Scalzi, because it was funded last year, it was truly recognized as an emergency, and the bonding bill did include money to repair the leaking dome, and we're just nearly under contract for that now, so we will get that part fixed. It will be obviously only fixing that piece, and it will stem the tide. It won't begin to attack any of the rest of these problems.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, this question I think is from Mr. Gornberg. Earlier I asked for a breakout of the space, and you to some degree gave that. I'm not sure how many square feet of new space we're going to have, but here's my question. You referenced the common areas, and that would be things like the visitor center, the restaurant, which would meet the needs of the governor, the House, and the Senate. I assume you referenced a press area, which would meet their needs. When I had a chance to visit with you earlier today, you mentioned that the governor would have additional office space below essentially his area currently. I'm trying to back in to find out when you talk about additional hearing rooms and additional office space, how much of that space is available for House use and how much of it is available for Senate use after we do that. Now, I assume that when you referenced senators this morning, you indicated that the minority party senators would be in the Capitol, which further exits House members from the Capitol. You know, originally, and I was here when we moved across the street, this is where the Department of Agriculture was. And it was viewed as temporary at the time. And we're going down a path now where it looks like the House, with the exception of the chambers, is going to be pretty much exited from the Capitol as a practical matter. Unless at this point in time we begin to re-enter the building, and any new proposal has to pass both bodies. So how does that break out in terms of what's available for hearing space for the House in the Capitol, office space for House members in the Capitol? What kind of square footage do we end up with?
Mr. Bjornberg?
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, I cannot give you the detailed space planning breakdowns. I can bring that certainly Thursday and get that to you. But I can tell you that working with the House staff that we've done, the House does not lose any space in the Capitol building. The House gains expansion. So we have not cut any space out for House members over there at all.
Mr. Thornburg, I assumed that we weren't going to lose space. I'm talking about the new space, trying to figure out what we were going to gain, although maybe I wouldn't have been totally surprised to find out we were going to lose space. If you can give us that, I would like to have that to find out what's going to be available for the House, because we have inadequate hearing rooms here as well. We're not exactly, being that we occupy this building in exactly the best situation. Our office space is grossly inadequate in this building. Our hallways, like what you pictured there, are full of file cabinets and temporary space for staff members. So we're far from an ideal situation, even if we were to totally exit the Capitol building and this become House space. So I think those are some of the questions that are underlying what some of us are saying. What was the process? Mm-hmm. What was the House input? We're being asked to put a lot on the table in terms of whether we support this or not. And I think what some of us are saying is that we have needs, and I don't see the needs of the Minnesota House being readily addressed with what is on the table right now, unless there's more here that we just don't simply know about in terms of how that's going to be shared.
Somebody wants to respond to that?
I'm trying to remember the question.
I might get a little more.
Yeah, well, Madam Chair, Representative Carlson. In 2014, if all goes according to plan, there will be 40,000 additional square feet vacant in this building as the minority Senate moves over there. That should give sufficient time to plan how that space is used. And
in terms of what's available in the Capitol for the Minnesota House of Representatives.
Okay.
That's the basic part of my question.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, I can promise to provide you that Thursday or early if you like it. We have the complete space programming breakdown, not only by departments, by room by room. So I can provide that.
I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Sure.
I have Junkie, Lanning, Murphy, and Dean. Representative Junkie.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm getting back to Representative Solberg's question. You gave a very general breakdown on costs, but I concur that again, we're talking about, as a committee, trying to make a decision on this project this year, perhaps, and for sure next year. And we do need more information. Representative Solberg asked, and I concur, what's the very basics out of that $260 million that we need to preserve the building, to stop the leaks, to make sure everything's up to code, without adding a 500-seat auditorium, without adding offices, without doing all the underground, without doing the expansion into the south side, without doing the underground parking in the back, without doing all the extras, just the absolute basics we need to do to preserve this beautiful building without any of the expansions. That's question number one, because then at that point, we can start thinking through this. You brought up the Ford building. You know, if we're at $80 million or $70 million or $100 million to do the basic preservation, then that's $130 million on the table today to maybe remodel the Ford building with office space for leadership and for Senate and for House and for meeting space. It might be more economical. I don't know that it would cost $130 million over there to do it. But again, until we get those basic breakdowns, staging or phasing breakdowns on that building and this plan, which we don't see any detail at all in this. It's very general and it's a very nice description. You did a nice overview. But we need that breakdown, and sometime in the next few weeks here, I would hope we could be provided that. Again, basic code, renovation, upgrade, and status quo versus a lot of the other amenities that are being talked about putting in here and opening up, and the phone space and all that is neat, cool stuff, but it's not helping us with our decision right now.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I guess I would say that given the directions that you were given, I think you've probably done the best you can in trying to come up with a proposal that meets those directions. I see a couple of huge problems with the solution here. To me, restoring means not changing the exterior look. And the change on the front of the Capitol is major change in the look of the Capitol. And along with that, we're getting these offices and some meeting space, but it's all underground. I would hate to have an office without a window. I mean, I think most people today like to have windows to be able to look out of in your office. And all of the office space, the space we have in front, not only really changes the look of the Capitol at the exterior, but it's all underground. It's all without windows. And I understand you can bring some borrowed light, skylight perhaps down into that tunnel or whatever, but again, I say that I think we've got to revisit the directions, and I think we need to look at options of getting the office space, meeting space off-site, and to really look at that before we go down this road that we're having presented to us today. Thank you.
And then, Representative Murphy, you're on.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Commissioner, and Mr. Bjornberg. I appreciate that you said that you would bring space allotments, square footages available. And one of the things that we have in the House space in the Capitol now is adjoining spaces. And I would think that that would be important to for us to be able to do our work. And we, since I spoke the last time, we do have space. The House has a lot of space on the basement level, on the ground level, on first floor, second floor, and third floor. And at various times, we have negotiated that to be used by the other body or someone else, but it is still our space that we are allowing to be used. And so we are interested in the total square amounts, no matter who is there now. And I was my initial question was having to do with the mob area, and on page 17, the hearing room area, I was wondering if we were still going to have that, but I understand that you're going to bring that on Thursday, and that's fine. And I just would like to reiterate that I just want you to know that we feel strongly about our space in the Capitol, and that we feel strongly about the people coming to the Capitol, too. Mm-hmm. Everything that you've said, I no disagreement with. And we do want to fix that Capitol, and we do want to make it strong. But the House presence at the Capitol and the House space at the Capitol is a lot more than the House chamber. And other people don't have the right to talk that away from us. And I feel better that I've been here today and that you've been here today, so I've heard your story and now you've heard mine, and so I'll think about what you said.
Thank you.
Representative Bean.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Bjornberg. First of all, you did a great job with the presentation, and I like the way the building looks. I think it's very historic. I disagree with Representative Wagenius. I think it does demonstrate a very strong need to tie the historic nature with the modern functioning of the building. If we were going to just make this building into a museum, we would just make it watertight, and we would repaint it, and we would allow the public to come and view it. But it has to be a functioning building, not just for today, but for many decades to come. So I think that the proposal is a very, very good first step. We should also realize that this is early in the design phase and that it has a long ways to go. I want to disagree with Mr. Bjornberg on one thing, and that he said it's one of the most beautiful capitals in the country. But I take kids through there all the time, and they hear it is the best, undisputed, even better than the U.S. Capitol, which is a dog by comparison. But in terms of the process I wanted to get involved with this right away last year because the Capitol is very important and something that we should all get behind. In terms of the process from the committee standpoint, we were brought in with the architects that asked us for reaction as the process was going along, and were very accessible, as was Mr. Rhodes during the process. However, the decisions on the program were fairly locked down. But those decisions on program, which what we call who goes where and what how big things are, were made before last year. So that was a decision that was either made in the process or in staff. So I think that that's something that we need to look at. And also moving forward, if we are going to participate in this design, we certainly need to have representation for communication and also for the design process moving into the future. Otherwise, it's probably not going to move forward. I don't feel sorry for you, Mr. Bjornberg, because I've presented like this before to church committees, and they're a lot worse. So.
I'm actually enjoying it.
Further?
Well, I guess from Representative Hausman, you're kind of in also moving forward. Just in terms of a question, turning a statement into a question, just, you know, how could you anticipate the integrating the House members into a better role, not just from a reaction standpoint, but also from a programming standpoint?
Genius.
Yes. As you all are continuing to come back here, and instead of having a more passive look at rail and how it's going to come into St. Paul, it seems to me that we should actively engage in that, because if we could look down and think of people coming from Representative Solberg's district, it may be that they park in St. Cloud and take the commuter train, then hop on the light rail and come on over here. They should be able to get to the Capitol without having to walk outside, frankly. Mm-hmm. So I hope that becomes part of your long-term thinking.
We obviously need the parking, too, but we're coming into a new age when traveling by car is not and Minnesota's going to have to catch up with the rest of the states in this regard, and I think we will.
It looks like Mr. Mandel would like to comment on that.
Madam Chair, Paul Mandel, with the principal planner for the Capitol. I can assure you that we have been, as the planner, I've been the planner at the Capitol since 1987. During those 20 years now, I've been involved in all four iterations of the LRT planning for the Central Corridor. In fact, tomorrow, Nancy and myself are attending two different meetings of county and metro transit, not county, metro transit and Met Council meetings. This afternoon I leave here to go to a city meeting, all on LRT. Our plan right now, if the route does not change, there are three locations for LRT stations in the Capitol area. One, immediately in front of the newest state buildings at the Ag Health Office Building. And that's all been integrated through the Capitol plans, part of the strategic plan from the Department of Administration. So we have been intimately involved with 20 years of LRT planning and integrated as much as possible. It's still got a long way to go, obviously, as you all know. But that has been an integral part of both this plan and the Capitol Area Comp Plan.
Just as a follow-up, is a stop there in the best interest of tourists coming from the state who would use rail to get to the Capitol? I don't need an answer now, but I do remember folks saying, well, nobody's ever going to go to the Mall of America on the train. That wasn't going to happen. I can easily envision people wanting to bring school children in on the train, and how does that integrate? Is it walkable? Is it easy walkable for the kids to get off the train and come to the Capitol?
Mr. Mandel, perhaps that would be another map you could bring at the next meeting, just so that we could get
The station in front of the Ford building, or approximate area of the Ford building, would be the one that the public would use the most to come to the Capitol building. And there is one up just on the opposite side of the freeway in front of the new DHS building also that would serve the downtown and that part of the cultural corridor also.
Just in conclusion, members, what I think has been the sentiment today is there has not been any disagreement with our responsibility to preserve and restore the building, and particularly in respect to the mechanicals that make that building work. But I think the phrase that Representative Lanning used was, we need a time out. And that puts the House at a very different stage than the Senate, which I know is ready this year to move forward. And so I believe we have to have some conversation with between the two bodies about that. Representative Lanning again mentioned that it might require a revisiting the directions you were given and how we perhaps got to that point. I recall getting an email and calling someone and saying, am I a member of this group? And then attending a meeting at the Capitol where we saw the presentation of all of the capitals across the country and how people were doing this. I recall at the time suggesting that I thought there would have to be really a statewide selling of this idea. Now, unless I truly missed anything, I don't recall another group meeting after that. What I'm thinking that this committee would want is a much more dynamic day-to-day involvement. I know for Representative Rest, she was able to come to my office and talk in detail about how they had structured the offices in such a way that they are structured around committees. And so there obviously had to be a very dynamic day-to-day involvement that at least some senators were involved in at someplace along the way. Unless you did just a fabulous job and they just appreciated everything you did, I'm not certain. But I think the tour on Thursday will be an opportunity for members here to see some of those behind-the-scenes places. If you were on Representative Kahn's committee, you have already taken that tour. I believe Representative Yaros's committee perhaps also intends to take that tour. And what we're suggesting is that we convene in the basement hearing room, and then the tour would leave from there. And so we hope as many of you as possible are able to join us. Representative Hansen, are you willing to move the minutes for Thursday, February 1?
I will do so.
Those minutes are moved. Is there discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. Those minutes are adopted. And one other item, somewhere around the table is the governor's bonding bill. If anyone would like to sign on as a co-author of the governor's bonding bill, it is here for you to do that. Representative Carlson. Should we be wearing coats? Are we in cold areas? And we obviously need very comfortable walking shoes. Anything?
I will keep you out of cold areas. So as you are dressed now, it's probably fine. I wouldn't wear your best suit or dress, but
okay.
You'll be fine. I mean, I'll go with my suit on, so I will keep you from things that are too rough. But they are dirty areas and such.
Thank you. Meeting is adjourned.